This is Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon and Julian McKenzie on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
New faces, new guys are going to have opportunities in our lineup, and wouldn't that be a great story if we went on a run and found a way in the playoffs here?
Blake Coleman says the goal still is the playoffs, and we'll find out Thursday night in Tampa Bay what the new look version of the Calgary Flames have to offer as they kick off a three-game road trip with stops in Tampa Bay, Florida, and in Carolina. Welcome to a Thursday edition of Sportsnet Today. It's Logan Gordon along with you in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studios, joined by my co-host on this Thursday, the one and only Julian McKenzie. What's up, J-Mac?
Oh, man, I'm just hanging out, man, doing my thing. Good to hear from you, brother.
Good to hear from you, my man. We got a ton to talk about on the program this Thursday. We have more reaction to the Noah Hanifin trade that happened on Wednesday. He is a member of the Vegas Golden Knights. He's even at practice for the Vegas Golden Knights on Thursday. We'll get Julian's thoughts on the big move for the Calgary Flames on Wednesday. Tell you about some of the latest trades happening around the NHL with the NHL's trade deadline quickly approaching on Friday. GM's busy once again on this Thursday, and we'll take a look at the new look Calgary Flames as they kick off this three-game road trip in Tampa Bay. Hear from head coach Ryan Huska and more from Blake Coleman, the former member of the Tampa Bay Lightning, as the show goes on. Again, in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studios. For Doug Lacey's Basement Systems, worried about radon? We install custom mitigation systems to reduce your risk. To find out more, visit dlbasementsystems.com for a free estimate. And Julian, we're kicking things off with more reaction. It took a while to get the full details on Wednesday night, but the final UFA piece that we were waiting on gets dealt, and it's the Vegas Golden Knights that swoop in and grab Noah Hanifin. We did immediate reaction Flames talk last night. We heard from Craig Conroy speaking with Brendan Parker of Flames TV to get a little bit of reaction. But as you would imagine, and as you've seen with all these big UFA trades, people still want to dive into what we saw from the Calgary Flames. And I guess we'll kick things off there. A reminder, the text line's open at 960-960. I know you've got a column up on The Athletic breaking down this one from your perspective. But for the listeners, Julian, how did you feel Craig Conroy did in this Noah Hanifin trade?
I feel as if for the caliber of player that Noah Hanifin is and maybe how he's been kind of propped up in the market, at least on the surface, I look at this deal and I wonder, is that really the best the Flames could do? And I can understand that some people will look at this market and say there are some exterior factors that may have been at play with why Craig Conroy only got the first round pick in 2025, which is technically conditional, provided the Golden Knights don't trade that first round pick, which means it would go to 2026, I believe, if I have that right. There's also a conditional third in there that is dependent on the Vegas Golden Knights winning a round before that turns into a second round pick. And then Daniil Miromanov, who the Flames seem to be high on as a 26-year-old mobile, offensive-minded defenseman. I don't know if you saw this, but Ryan Dittrich, who's one of the team reporters for the Calgary Flames, had a conversation with Daniil Miromanov today for a story that's going around. And the one quote that people are kind of latching onto with Miromanov, and I realize I'm reading a portion of this here, but he's saying, "I feel my potential is limitless. I know that one day I'll be competing to be the best defenseman in the league. I promise you that." There's a lot riding on this in terms of a risk factor for the Flames on this trade. And in terms of how much they believe in Miromanov, who also signed a pretty cheap extension. But I think for the way that this trade was done, I kind of thought there'd be a little bit more in terms of futures. But for them to get a slightly older player who's coming off significant knee surgery and is, I'm sure, going to be plugged into the lineup at some point, and the team really feels his AHL skill set that he's shown with the offensive mindedness will translate to the NHL level, you kind of have to think if this is the return that the Flames are going to get for Noah Hanifin, you kind of have to hope
for Craig Conroy's sake that it works out, because I think an ideal move would have been getting a first, making sure you get a first either this year, maybe next year, getting a prospect and maybe another roster body. So yeah, I think if you rank all of the Craig Conroy moves from what he did last summer to now, I don't know if it's at the higher end, but I'll give Craig Conroy this. I mean, he's done some trades where the trade grades weren't as favorable on him to begin with, and it has changed for the better. And specifically, I'm referencing the Tyler Toffoli, Yegor Sharon, Gobic trade. But at least on the surface, I still feel as if maybe there could have been more that the Flames could have gotten. And ultimately, when you look at the haul that they've gotten now, yes, they've gotten first-round picks. Yeah, they've gotten prospects. But this team still needs that higher-end blue-chip pick or prospect that'll help put them over the top and justify the retooling.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now that I've kind of had some time to process everything, I've kind of come out with it that I don't love the return. I don't hate the return. There's a lot of conditions, and I think, you know, having to wait and see what Vegas does over the next 24 or 48 hours, whether or not you're getting a 25 or a 26 first rounder is interesting, and I guess a creative way of doing things. But, you know, I keep going back, Julian, to, you know, how Noah Hanifin's camp handled this thing and how Pat Brisson decided to go about his business in this situation. And you can like that or you can dislike that. And I'm very curious now when Noah Hanifin makes his return to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome next week, just how much the fan base is willing to show their maybe disapproval of how he handled that process. Because, look, I think at the end of the day, this came down to, you know, as much as you'd love to say it was a level playing field for Craig Conroy, like maybe it was for the Elias Lindholm trade, I don't think that was true. I think you were dealing with a couple of teams that Noah was willing to go to and sign an extension with, and that severely handicapped the GM when it came to what kind of return he was going to get. And if you can get a first out of this, you're going to get a first out of this. You're potentially going to get a second out of it. A lot of the onus is going to be put now to me on the, you know, the amateur scouting staff of the Calgary Flames to make sure that those picks become assets for the Calgary Flames one way or another. So again, I don't hate it. I don't love it. I think understanding the circumstances is very important in all of this. And the Miromanov, you know, part of it is interesting to me because it's kind of becoming an MO of Craig Conroy in at least some way, shape, or form that, you know, they feel very confident in their pro scouts and the guys that they've got eyes on to take a chance on some players that maybe have a bit of baggage, if you will, coming to them, whether that's, you know, a guy like Yegor Sharangovic who fell off offensively last year with New Jersey, or a Andre Kuzmenko who fell off in the coach's favor in Vancouver this season. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think the final say of this trade will probably come down one day in the future when we find out what becomes of those draft picks for the Calgary Flames. But when it's all said and done, I will give Craig Conroy a lot of credit in the sense that, you know, he told us back on day one of his, you know, introduction as being this team's GM that he was going to trade the UFAs if they didn't come to terms on contracts. And as we sit here, Julian, you know, about 24 hours away from the NHL's trade deadline, he backed up those words.
Yeah, and I think it's ultimately the right call. We can go back and forth on the haul and what he got for all of those players, but I can give Craig Conroy a lot of credit that he could have easily just sat back and looked at his team playing the way that they were playing over the last little while and said, you know what, we're going to go for it and see what we can do. But he said, you know what, the pending UFAs are there. I don't want to be in a Johnny Gaudreau-esque situation like I was previously. And he sold off those assets. And it's not an easy job for him to do what he did, especially as a first-time GM. But he found a way to at least make it work with the pieces that he was able to sell off. But yeah, I think for this Flames team now, and I'm sure we'll get into this, very curious to see how they respond with the way the team looks now. And also, of course, with the deadline still coming up on Friday, is this it for Craig Conroy? Is there more to come? I mean, do you make another minor league move? We saw Jordan Osterley on waivers today. Jacob Markstrom is the biggest domino left. It feels like it's a matter of, I mean, maybe it's a matter of when right now and not just if, whether it's at the deadline or in the summer. That's the biggest domino that Craig Conrad has left to deal with. It's, does he want to still stay with this team as they go through this awkward transition? Does Craig Conroy think there's more value in moving him and seeing what works with that no movement clause? Is Tom Fitzgerald in New Jersey? Because we've seen that, we've heard the Devils be so connected to this player. If nothing works around the market with getting a goalie, is he going to pick up the phone and call Craig Conroy and say, "Hey, I want to make this move"? I would be surprised at this point if Markstrom is the guy who moves on Friday, but I think now for Craig Conroy and what he's trying to pull off, it's funny. We looked at the pending UFAs as those were the things on his to-do list to deal with, and now all of a sudden, Jacob Markstrom is on that checklist. And at least through Friday, there's still some reason to believe that it's something that Craig Conroy may have to tackle. So we'll have to wait and see on that.
Thursday night in Tampa Bay, the first of what will be a very interesting three-game road trip for this Calgary Flames team, and it'll be a different-looking group. Connor Zary is not on the trip. He has been on the injured reserve, not able to be activated until Sunday, so a good chance he doesn't play at all on this road trip. Martin Pospisil, you will miss this road trip, as last night's news brought us that he has been suspended three games by the Department of Player Safety for boarding Vince Dunn in that game against Seattle. So no Pospisil, no Zary, obviously no Chris Tanev. We've been without him for two games, and now no Noah Hanifin as we head into this key three-game stretch for the Calgary Flames. Joel Hanley expected to make his Calgary Flames debut after being claimed off of waivers by the Calgary Flames from the Dallas Stars. 4 o'clock, Steinberg's got your Flames warm-up. 5 o'clock, Derek Wills and Megan Mickelson with the call of Flames hockey here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. And you know what? The one thing I want to say about Miramanov in all of this too, Julian, and I think it's an interesting point. I can't tell you I've seen enough of him to get a good read. I know Wes has talked to Wes Gilbertson.
Me neither.
Post Media has talked to a couple former coaches of his, and the reviews have been pretty glowing for the guy, at least at the American Hockey League level. I'll say this. I think the guy's going to get a good opportunity here in Calgary. More so than he would have gotten in Vegas, where they're obviously, Captain Obvious moment, now a lot deeper on defense than the Calgary Flames are. So this is going to be, for me, it's a low risk opportunity. If it doesn't work out for Daniil in Calgary, it's a contract that's at 1.125 for 2 years, and you took a chance on a guy that hadn't had a ton of NHL experience. But look, Braden Bahal's turned into a decent enough, you know, NHLer for the Calgary Flames coming off of waivers, and just getting an opportunity seems to have, you know, brought out something in him. Again, I'm not saying it's a game changer for the Calgary Flames that changes their future, but I'm at least curious to see what an opportunity at the NHL level looks like for this young man.
Absolutely. Especially if he has all that offense, right? And we see what defenses are now, where, especially with what the Flames have tried to do partway through the year to now, where they want more activation and more offense from their defense. Kamir Manoff fit that MO from their back line, from their rear guards? That's a good question. And yeah, you're right. I think he'll get that opportunity, considering how stacked the defense corps in Vegas. They looked stacked already before that trade, but having guys like Brady McNabb and Alex Pietrangelo in the back there, you're able to plug in a guy like Noah Hanifin over there, Shea Theodore, so many different names. Like a guy like Miramanov obviously is going to be an extra with that defense core. So yeah, with the way that the Flames look now, a right shot D, obviously with Chris Tanev gone, that's a hole they were going to need to fill a little bit better. But he'll get his opportunity here. And the fact that he is on the cheap, you know, I can understand where you're coming from with the fact that, like, yes, it will be a low-risk move. But I still think that pressure's there, considering that he came the other way in this Hanifin trade. And because of the fact that Craig Conroy, at least through the statement that he dropped yesterday, seemed really high on the player and his capabilities. So that, just like we were talking about last week with Artem Grushnikov, we have to kind of wait and see with this player.
How do you feel about the totality of what Craig Conroy's got? And I bring that up because Frank Saravalli, one of our NHL insiders here on Sportsnet 960 from Daily Faceoff, last night put out the ins and outs of the five UFAs that Craig Conroy's moved out and what the Flames brought in. And I'll run it through you if you haven't seen the tweet. So obviously, going back to the summer, Toffoli, Zadorov, Lindholm, Tanev, and Hanifin have now all been traded in for the Calgary Flames. Two firsts, a second, four thirds, a fourth, a fifth, Yegor Sharangovich, Andrei Kuzmenko, Artem Grishnikov, Yoni Yermo, Daniil Miramanov, and Hunter Brustevich. One of those thirds can still turn into a second, and one of those fourths can turn into a third. What a year it's been for Craig Conroy, first of all, as his first year as GM. But when you look at it from that whole scope, Julian, of the five guys going out and what the Flames got in, how do you feel about the totality of the work that Craig Conroy's gotten done here, knowing that so many of these, again, are going to be determined on what those draft picks become for the team?
First off, I appreciate you going through that entire list, because in my latest column for The Athletic, I too wrote out the players that came in and out from Conroy's moves, and it looks like I got it all right. So thank you for that. Yeah, as a whole, that high-end player is still missing. That high-end prospect is still missing. That high-end pick is still missing. And I get it. You could look at how this team, with the players and the hands that they were dealt with some of these trades and certain situations. At the end of the day, in order for the Flames to be better than the muddy middle that they don't want to be in, they need those picks and players to make that work. And right now, if you look at that haul, it's a good haul. Is it great? I will have to wait in time and see what some of these players turn into, which makes it very hard to assess. But at least on the surface, I think it's a good haul, but I'm waiting to see if it's great. In terms of volume, you give yourself players who are helping you right now at the NHL level, players who bolster your prospect cupboard. When we talked to Scott Wheeler a couple weeks ago, we talked about how that prospect cupboard for the Flames has gone up from where it was before. And all these different draft picks, including some of the conditional ones, that could turn into solid picks and players for this team down the line. And yeah, it is on the team scouting department to find the right players that fit for this franchise that can help elevate them. And I tried to make the point in my column, too, that, you know, you do need those high-end players. But yes, it's also possible that you could find them at 23rd overall or 47th overall, just like what the Dallas Stars have been able to do. But of course, they are thriving off that incredible draft class that got the Miro Heiskanen, Jason Robertson, and Jake Oettinger. I think, and Craig Conroy knows this too, I know when I asked him about just needing having that type of high-end player or prospect on that team, he knows his team needs that. And I'm still wondering if there's a way for him to trade up into a top 10, whether it's this draft or next year's draft, or taking some of those pieces that he's gotten and turning them into a higher end top six, no doubt about it, type of player. Because I think that's ultimately what this team needs. That they've shown with the roster as constructed, even before all these trades started, that they have solid depth, just no one spectacular up top. And in order for this retool to really work, they need to put themselves in a position to get that type of player, whether it's having a poor season next year where you get yourself a top pick, or you get creative with the haul that you have and you move some of those assets in order to put yourself in that position. Yeah. I wondered if about the possibility of getting a 2024 first round pick to give this team three first round picks, and maybe you offload them for a team in the top 10 and you put yourself up there, or 2025, where a lot of people are hyping up that draft class. At the very least, if you have that pick, provided Vegas doesn't trade it, you put yourself in a position where you could get a really good draft pick, a really good player out of that draft pick. And you know, I'm sure you know this too, that's not subjected to any of those conditions from the Sean Monahan trade, where they're not going to lose that pick because they stand to lose a pick next year as it stands. Yep. But I think they just need that high-end player somewhere along this retool, and they haven't gotten it yet.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that. My most curious part of this now, with Jacob Markstrom sort of still being the exception to what I'm about to say, in a sense of most of the moving out has been done for the Calgary Flames. Yeah. Now, I think the process will quickly turn for Craig Conroy about what they're trying to bring in. And I really am genuinely curious if the Calgary Flames get aggressive and pursue, you know, a young NHLer, Julian, and maybe take a chance at moving a package of all of these picks or maybe a couple of these added prospects that they've brought in and try to make something happen that way, right? Is there a 23, 24-year-old out there that really fits your need as that high-end player? And maybe you go about doing your business that way if you're the Calgary Flames. Developmentally, look, we all know the draft is a tricky beast at the best of times. And look, I know Pat used the example on Wednesday's show. You know, maybe there's a chance that Calgary goes out and finds their Philip Roenick, if you will. You know what I mean? And that's not necessarily the defenseman, but, you know, that young guy that maybe you didn't think was out there, but now you have the draft capital and the youngsters in your system to now go out and get, and you don't necessarily have to just rely on the draft to bring in those high-end players. I'm very curious about that, you know, avenue of doing business too.
I wonder which team, I mean, is New Jersey that team? We keep going back to New Jersey because of the connections to Jacob Markstrom, but I mean, that's a team that has some of those players that Craig Conroy would want, like an Alexander Holtz or a Dawson Mercer. Like, are they willing to do that? We just saw Buffalo yesterday move on from Casey Mittelstadt in exchange for a Bo Byram. Do they have someone else in their system that they'd be willing to move? I think what you're getting on here is exactly what I'm saying too, where if Craig Conroy finds a way to put together some kind of trade package to get that higher end quality prospect or young player who could be plugged into a lineup and help them in the future, that really helps their retool. What they have right now, in terms of volume, it looks impressive, but in terms of quality, it still remains to be seen how far that goes. But I think that they have an opportunity here with the haul that they have assembled in terms of their returns, where they could put themselves in that position, whether it's now or whether it's in the summer. And if they get that player, it doesn't have to be from New Jersey, it could be from any other team. If any team is willing to play ball, that really helps this team going forward.
He's Julian McKenzie, my co-host on the afternoon today here on Sportsnet Today. Let's dive into the text line at 960-960. It's always open to you if you're listening live here on Sportsnet 960. Feel free to shoot us a text. We got a lot to get to here, Julian. I'm not even sure that you'd be surprised by that because lots of Flames fans, lots of opinions on what we've seen from Craig Conroy. Let's start with Wedley. He starts it off with, Conroy did the best he could due to circumstances. Too bad we couldn't get one of Brisson or Edstrom. And the prospect thing's interesting to me, Julian, because
I was about to ask you about that.
You know what? The one thing I've learned in this week and a bit, maybe more than ever, I just don't know how many teams, A, are interested in moving their top young prospects, period, or B, are willing to do it for guys that don't have that contract extension. Because, you know, even in the, say, Tampa Bay was the one that was getting thrown around, and Isaac Howard was the guy we were talking about a lot. Like, if you're Tampa Bay and you're tapped out, Julian, is that not a guy that you're hopefully relying on the next year or two to jump into your lineup at a very cheap price and produce NHL minutes?
Sure, but if you're a team like Tampa Bay where you're not hoping for kids who could be ready for 1 and 2 years, you're hoping for guys who can help you now, you could understand why a team like Tampa Bay would be interested, as they reportedly were all the way through the end of this process. And it brings up to the question I'm looking to ask you here.
Sure.
We see the two draft picks and a roster body in Daniil Miromanov. How much differently do we look at this trade if that conditional pick was flopped into Brendan Brisson? Like, it was a first round pick, a prospect, and a roster body. That's just one subtle change, but would that not make a difference? If they made that trade with Tampa Bay, say, for example, they get a 2026 first round pick, which you'd rather it be a little sooner, but you get some combination of Ethan Gauthier or Isaac Howard and maybe another roster player. Is that better than the Vegas trade? I would potentially put that up for debate, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, it's hard for me because you don't know what you're debating against, in a sense. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know what player X becomes of that draft pick. So it's hard because you've obviously got more knowledge and a base of what you're seeing from a prospect already that makes you excited, and it's obviously a reason that you would have valued that person as a potential ad. So it's a bit hard for me in that sense to know about it, because I think there's always, you know, name value versus draft pick is always hard, right? Because I think you're always going to value what you know compared to what you don't, if that makes sense. Does that make sense to you?
Sure. I mean,
like, I mean, wouldn't you always, like, wouldn't part, you always value what, part, what you know compared to what you don't?
Yeah, but like, if you're going to go that route, then, I mean, no wonder people overvalue the players and picks on their own teams, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, I can understand the toughness of coming with that, because you don't really know what you're going to get into a player. And if they end up developing, you know, they depends on how they are as a player, depends on how they mesh with coaches and all those other factors. But if you get a kid who's a stud, right? Like, hey, if it walks like a duck, it talks like a duck, like it might work out, right? And maybe those opportunities just didn't present itself in a Noah Hanifin trade. But I just feel that for a player of his caliber, for the Flames to not come back with a prospect in this trade, I think it's a questionable return. And I think that, yes, while you do get those draft picks to help you out in the future, I think just having younger players, there's value in having that. And I'm not necessarily saying that what Tampa might have been offering would necessarily be better than Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for a player like Noah Hanifin to get a young body back, I mean, like 21, 22, 23, 24 years old, to get a player like that, I think if you're Craig Conrad, you need that. That's just my view on it. And I'm not the GM. He obviously feels differently. He's satisfied with his trade that he was able to consummate with the Vegas Golden Knights. But I think for a player like Noah Hanifin, getting a younger player, whether from a Tampa, whether from a Boston, that would have made this trade look a lot better on the surface.
More text at 960-960. Matt and Cochran, I'm of the opinion Conroy should have started trade talks with other teams back in November when he turned down the contract extension. Instead, they twiddled their thumbs, hoping he'd change his mind, gave Hanifin and his agent time to poison his trade value. Matt, I could tell you, hearing from guys like Pat and others, that they were trying to trade Noah Hanifin last summer. The value just wasn't there. Like, yep. You know, deadlines spur action and spur teams to, you know, give up sometimes what we feel or what other GMs feel is equal value. So that would be my only reply to that, is that this isn't the first time they've gone down this road for Noah Hanifin. They just didn't feel at the time, at earlier junctions, especially in the summer when Craig was this new GM on the block, Julian, and had all these assets up for grabs, that he was getting fair value for those kind of players back in the summer.
And remember, some of those teams we talk about, you mentioned the fact that some teams might not have been willing to move some of their top prospects. Remember that first round of the draft last year? Nobody moved out of that draft class, and we all thought that was going to be an opportunity for the Flames to get in more in that opening round because of the potential of prospects and also with the pending UFAs that they had. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, the Flames were going off on moving Noah Hanifin from last summer, and you weren't just the only ones. Like, there were all these pending UFAs. This has been like a near year long process for Craig Conroy in terms of dealing with these pending UFAs. So I mean, if the value was there, the value's there to do it, but I'm not completely surprised that it got to this point where the team waited until the deadline, which is ultimately the risk that a lot of people knew that they were going to have to deal with. And for it to get to this point, I can understand why some people would feel a little disappointed and underwhelmed at the return.
This text, Connor is a joke. Fringe players back, sending your best players in division. Only a certain amount of teams make the playoffs. Why are you making them better?
I disagree with the Conroy is a joke thing. Like, I mean, that's a little strong of a comment to make for a first time GM who's in a situation where he's trying to offload all these players. I mean, you can critique the moves, I think, and you could, I mean, I know I've done that in some form, but to go on and say he's a joke, I think that's a little bit of a strong word to use, but you know, you're entitled to your opinion.
Agreed. Paul and Chester, boys, we received a good D prospect capital and picks. Plus, we're not talking enough about the cap space we now have this offseason. Many other teams don't have it. There's a lot of value in that. I think that's a good point by Paul. This text says, I think what's getting lost in assessing the returns for Tanev and Hanifin is that other teams know their UFAs, and with Conroy under pressure to move them, the assets he may have normally got were likely lowballed. This text, and I've seen this one a couple times, and I can't wrap my head around it, Julian, but maybe it's the same text that I've seen. This one says, Craig gets a B-plus in my books. Would have turned into an A-plus if he had convinced McFarland and that Lindholm is a better player than Mittelstadt and somehow lifted Bowen Byram off their hands. I don't see the equal value in Casey Mittelstadt and Elias Lindholm to make that happen. I know that Colorado's been looking for a center, and I know the fact that Bowen Byram's name had been out there a bit certainly tantalized Flames fans, but I can understand why Colorado valued getting a guy like Casey Mittelstadt for Bowen Byram rather than Elias Lindholm. That's just my opinion, though.
Yeah, younger asset compared to an older player, especially now who's going through a bit of a down year and might end up going to his third team before the deadline. Yeah, Casey Mittelstadt's a bit of an easier play in this situation.
And as I check, and Casey Mittelstadt also an RFA, so you got team control, for the next little bit. So, a couple more here before we get out. It's Logan Gordon, Julian McKenzie along with you. This one says, in Conroy, we trust. It's time to trust the process of what they're building here. This text says, first time GM, Nonis and Maloney are there. That from Steven Mindeport. Yeah, but
that's true.
This is his first time calling the shots himself, though. You can have, and look, and Bradshaw Living had Don Maloney and others, other experienced GMs or hockey executives along with them, but I don't think if this goes sour or doesn't go the way Flames fans want it to, I don't think the blame gets placed on Dave Nonis or Don Maloney if it doesn't go the way. I think everyone will point it at the guy right behind the decision-making. In my mind, that's Craig Conroy, Julian.
Yeah, he's in the spotlight. I know, in talking with him about it, he probably would rather not be in the spotlight for selling off assets and being the team with all the cards at the deadline. But no, it's Craig Conroy. He's the face of the front office, and it falls on him to make these deals work and to get quality players to help this retool.
He's Julian McKenzie, contributor here at Sportsnet 960, my co-host on this Thursday. Of course, covers the Flames for The Athletic as well. This is Sportsnet Today. Logan Gordon along with you as well in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studios. We'll take a break, come back on the other side. Why don't we take a look at what this Flames team's going to look like on Thursday, because it's a much different looking group than even the last time this Flames team was out. We'll do that when we come back. We'll also let you know about some of the latest trades happening on this Thursday ahead of the NHL's trade deadline. It's coming up tomorrow here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We got you covered all day long. The big show, Sportsnet Today with myself and Peter Klein. Pat Steinberg's got you for Flames Talk. We'll break down anything and everything that happens. NHL trade deadline on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, brought to you by one of our great sponsors, All Kind Door Services, your go-to service company for the last 35 years, offering 24-hour emergency service for all your door repairs, anything that swings, slides, or rolls. Visit allkinddoorservices.com. More on the Flames when we come back with Logan and Julian here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. All right, Logan and Julian along with you on Sportsnet Today. Flames game day, Flames in Tampa Bay to kick off a three-game road trip. Lightning, Panthers, and Hurricanes, the next three up for the Calgary Flames. And, dude, it's going to be a different-looking team on the ice Thursday, Julian. Not only with Tanev and Hanifin gone, but you add in an injury to Connor Zeri, a suspension for Martin Pospisil, and a waiver claim now in Joel Hanley. Whew. Can tell you we're expecting Jacob Markstrom to get the start in net. Daniil Marimanov is traveling today. Possibility to play Saturday in Florida, but not likely for tonight. Joel Hanley set to make his Flames debut. Andre Vasilevskiy on the other side. More for Matt Coronato and Jacob Pelche, no doubt, with Nozeri and Pospisil. But, man, I can't remember, Julian, heading into a game this season and thinking, we got a lot to watch for when it comes to the night. Not only the result and, obviously, who picks up the 2 points, but I mean, Ryan Huska has had to adjust his lineup maybe more than he has all season.
Yeah. Seeing Peltier on that top line with Kadri and Kuzmenko, or seeing Coronado with that line with Huberto and Sharon Govich. At least the young players are getting put in feature spots across this lineup. And at least, you know what, in a sea of changes with this team, the Mangiapane, Backlund, Coleman line remains as is. Like that, that's like, I keep saying this phrase a lot nowadays, but set it and forget it is what you could say with that line, considering what they do at both ends of the ice. But I'm really intrigued about the defense core, and just in talking to guys like Oliver Shillington over the last few days about getting more and more of that responsibility and adding more time. And I get it. He's been on this team for a while. He's played with guys like Rasmus Anderson before, but that the Flames just lost an entire defensive pairing in Noah Hanifin and Chris Tanev. Like that is not a small thing for this team to lose. And that's asking a lot of Shillington. It's asking a lot of Braden Pahal. Dennis Gilbert looks like he's going to be in the lineup again for the first time in a while. Joel Hanley, who I have to admit, like, I remember being in Montreal and seeing him play for a couple games. When I saw that the Flames picked him up off waivers, my first thought was, he's still playing? Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, and that's not shade to Joel Hanley.
Nope.
Good on him for that. He's been able to make a career for himself. He was a stopgap in Dallas for the last little while. I just couldn't believe he was still in the league. So that's kind of cool to see that he's still around. But he's going to get pressed into service. And once Miramanov eventually joins this team, really curious to see what happens on that right-hand side. But I think the pairing of all of the pairings on this team that I'm really curious about the most, and I mean, I know they had Shillington and Anderson the other day together, but Anderson, Weegar together, like those two are your best defensemen on this team right now. And there's going to be a lot of pressure on those two to hold down the fort as this team finishes the season.
Sure is. We've already seen some of the, feeling of Chris Tanev being gone in the back end the last two games, at least from what I've seen watching this group. I'm very curious how, you know, the 25 plus minutes of Noah Hanifin that have been out there at times gets distributed throughout this lineup. And it's a tough test, man. Tampa Bay is one of those teams, Julian, right in the mix in the East, as it feels like they always are. It's going to be a really good challenge for this group. Nikita Kucherov, of course, one of the, you know, top point producers in the NHL. This is a really good group the Flames have against them tonight. It's a tough road trip, period.
Tampa Bay, Florida, Carolina, and then when you get back home, you got Colorado and Vegas waiting for you. We're looking at a very tough stretch.
They haven't done anything, those two teams. What are you talking about?
Actually, you know what's funny? We make that joke because look at how the Flames have played against those types of teams all year long. For whatever reason, they've found ways to get results against these types of teams. Not all the time, but I've seen people make the joke saying, oh, look at this team. They're going to go 5-0 on this stretch here. If they find a way to do that on that stretch, that is probably going to go down as their most impressive stretch of the season. But for them to have those quality of opponents at such a weird time in the schedule where you lose Noah Hanifin and you're coming to grips with that. They're still just getting over the Chris Tanev thing from last week. And again, with the deadline up, who knows what else this team will add or subtract before the 1 p.m. Mountain deadline. It's still getting used to the fact that it's a 1 p.m. Mountain deadline and not 3 p.m. Eastern, as I've been used to all my life, but you get what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
This is a very interesting time. And for the Flames to their first opponent out of the deadline is going to be the Florida Panthers. And then those other teams I mentioned, that could easily be a stretch where your emotions are very up in the air. And if you're not ready for those games, that could easily take the Flames out of that chase for a wild card spot. This is their most important stretch of the season, as far as I'm concerned, if they want to make the playoffs.
So the Flames have moved out their UFAs. The contenders around both the West and the Eastern Conference have been loading up. It was a busy day Wednesday. And before we get out of here on this Thursday, Julian, want to bring our listeners up to date on everything that's happened on this Thursday, because we've got lots of moves to talk about. We kick it off earlier this morning, the Toronto Maple Leafs and former Flames GM Brad Treliving adding another member to his blue line. Joel Edmondson's been acquired from the Washington Capitals for a third, a fifth, and 50% retention on that for Washington. How did you feel about now Lyubushkin and Edmondson in Toronto? Does that move the needle on that back end for you at all?
It definitely makes them bigger and tougher. And if there's one thing that this market in Calgary knows that Brad Tree Living is certainly not averse to, it's adding those types of players. And for a team like Toronto that has the skill up front, that has all that finesse and ability, yeah, they could use that toughness. Just thinking of a tweet from a Sportsnet colleague, Eric Engels, about Joel Edmondson that I saw this morning about how apparently in Toronto for years, scouts would they would say, I think the team management would be like, we don't need a player like a Joel Edmondson whenever scouts would bring him up. And obviously with Brad Tree Living in the fold, it seems like a player like Joel Edmondson would be a lot more welcomed in that locker room. Well, not necessarily in the locker room, but just in terms of the way management sees it. But in terms of getting physical, playing hard along the boards, dealing with teams' best players and guys in front of the net, I mean, Joel Edmondson is a good depth guy. He's been on a cup-winning team before. He was on that Montreal Canadiens team that went all the way to the final in 2021 and beat the Toronto Maple Leafs. Actually, here's a fun fact for Toronto Maple Leafs fans who are listening. Joel Edmondson has been on the winning side of that Canadiens comeback series win in 2021 when the Canadiens were down 3-1 against the Leafs. And he was on the winning side of the David Ayers Zamboni game. Like, this guy knows, has experienced firsthand beating the Toronto Maple Leafs in some of their most lowest moments in their franchise over the last few years. So it's really funny to see him join that organization. But he comes across as a really good locker room guy as well, at least from my time being around him in Montreal. So I actually don't mind the move, but I can also understand that some Leafs fans are looking at the team, they're looking at Austin Matthews, and they're like, is that it? Like, is there anyone else this team could add? Is there a way this team could get better? Because I made the point before, with the way Austin Matthews is playing, you cannot afford to waste this season. And that's a lot of pressure on one Brad Tree Living.
The Nashville Predators, who hold the final wild card spot in the Western Conference, made two moves today. First one up, they acquire Anthony Beauvillier from the Chicago Blackhawks in exchange for a fifth-round pick. The Edmonton Oilers continue to add after adding Adam Henrik and Sam Carrick. They're bringing in a defenseman this time, one we know well here in Calgary, Julian Troy Stetcher. Welcome back to Alberta, along with a seventh-round pick. He's been acquired from Arizona for a fourth, so the Oilers continue to tinker and bring in Troy Stetcher. What do you think of that one?
I'll say this, Edmontonians, if you have dogs, please clean up after yourself, because as we saw in Calgary last year, he is not afraid to shame people online for dog etiquette. But yeah, I'm not surprised that the Oilers would try to improve themselves on the back end. Maybe they were willing to make a move for Chris Tanev. We'll ultimately never know now with the way things have gone. But this is a team that realizes the window's there for them to compete, for them to win a Stanley Cup, and they needed to do some kind of move. I liked Troy Stetcher in Calgary last year, and I was still a bit surprised that the Flames ultimately didn't keep him, because I thought he would have been a more than adequate third-pairing defenseman. But to see him in Edmonton colors, that is going to look very weird.
And the Colorado Avalanche stayed busy as well in this arms race with the Vegas Golden Knights in the West. They acquired Brandon Duhaime from the Minnesota Wild for a third-round pick in 2026, and then they meet up with Nashville for another deal, acquiring Yakov Trenin in exchange for Jeremy Hanzel and a third-round pick in 2025. Colorado been one of the busiest teams around trade deadline this year. Julian, going back to yesterday's big move with Casey Mittelstadt and Sean Walker coming in.
I know teams don't like that label ahead of the deadline of being a winner and a loser. Like, who cares about that? You want to win the big thing in June. Colorado's looking real good with the moves that they've been able to make at the deadline. They're even able to clear off salary with Ryan Johansson going the other way in that Sean Walker trade. The Mittelstadt trade, I thought, was really good for them, getting a good young center, even if it meant having to part ways with Bowen Byram, which, by the way, Buffalo, Bowen Byram, Owen Power, Rasmus Dahlin, Matthias Samuelson.
Mm-hmm.
That is a really good defense core for them going forward. They just need the playoff success, man. That team has been knocking on the door for too long. They really could use some playoff games in that market. But for Colorado, a team that we all know is already a contender, and they're going to give themselves every opportunity to win Lord Stanley's mug in the summer. I like the move for them with Mittelstadt. I like them adding more pieces as well, some bit pieces they could put up and down their lineup. I mean, it feels like we're not talking about them as much compared to what Vegas might have gotten another, and of course Edmonton from our neck of the woods, but Nathan MacKinnon and them boys, they might do it again.
And quickly, the waiver wire update on this Thursday. It'll be one to watch, of course, as we get closer to the trade deadline. Nashville claimed Jarrett Anderson Dolan off of waivers from the LA Kings. The rest of yesterday's waiver wire cleared. We've mentioned Jordan Osterley from the Flames on waivers today, along with three Carolina Hurricanes, Brendan Lemieux, Tony D'Angelo, and Antti Raanta. William Lagesson from Toronto's on waivers as well. Boris Kachuk from Chicago, Evan Cormier in Florida, and Tobias Bjornfoot for the Vegas Golden Knights. Julian, we're under 24 hours to go for the NHL's trade deadline. We got a game tonight to look forward to, and who knows what happens with the Calgary Flames between now and the deadline on Friday. But this hour flew by, as it always does with you, man. Appreciate you being along with me.
Hey, thanks so much for letting me hang out, my man.
He is Julian MacKenzie, the great contributor here on Sportsnet 960, and of course covering the Flames for The Athletic, my outstanding co-host on this Thursday edition of Sportsnet Today. That's going to put a wrap on us. It was a busy show. More Noah Hanifin reaction, your text, and more on the fan feedback line. We also went through the latest trades on this Thursday. What's next for the Calgary Flames? You missed any of it, check us out on the podcast, Google, Amazon, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher. Enjoy the Lightning and the Calgary Flames tonight. We'll be back on Trade Deadline Friday to get you set with all your local coverage right here on your home of the Flames. This is Sportsnet 960, The Fan.